Bookie Beatdown coming at you, Paul, Cody, UFC Houston. Week off, fresh off of a Canadian win in overtime against Czechia. My God, it was the vibe. We decided to delay it a little bit. Sorry to people who are probably like, "Where's the show right now?" But you know, we needed to see the conclusion. It's Canada. Like, we don't care about 99% of this Olympics, whatever happens. But it's like that Canadian men's hockey team. It's like, It's a day of mourning if we lost that game. That would have been an absolute disaster. This show would have been an absolute mess, but we got smiles on our faces because they pulled it out from the skin of their teeth. It wasn't supposed to be that close, but that's why you can never have, you know, minus 1,500 favorites when both teams are pretty much filled with NHL players. Like, you know, Dosell played pretty well on the one side.
No, Patrick's actually the best guy on the ice, and he's on the other team.
Pastrin? No, yeah, he's not the best guy.
Dude, he played like it. Come he played on. Like it. Man, that guy was all over
he's
the
great.
Ice.
He's great.
Mick but Martin scored like, the overtime
probably
goal.
Probably like fifth best guy on the ice, maybe?
That played? Like, I'm talking about the performance in that game. Who were the four guys ahead of him? Mitch Marner scored the big goal. He was a ghost
McDavid
before that.
McDavid played great.
McDavid played really good. They're double teaming him the whole time.
Macklin played great.
Anyways,
McKinnon didn't do all that much. I thought Cale Makar played fine. Anyway, people didn't come to listen to us talk about hockey. Maybe people do enjoy it,
though. Well, I'll tie it back into MMA for us here, Paul. So I was having a phone conversation with a good buddy of mine, and he's talking about Canada's just going to smoke Czechia. And I say, yeah, you're probably right. But just like MMA, because he's a fight fan, like, you got these pockets that just dominate, right? Currently, Russia dominates. In hockey, Canada dominates. When I was a kid, we're guaranteed 4 gold medals every Olympics for the Winter Olympics. Guaranteed. Men's hockey, women's hockey, men's curling, women's curling. What's up? What's up? But then as other countries start to devote more resources and the sport starts to take off and they get more athletes and more representation, then it starts to narrow up. So he's like, well, what are you saying? I'm saying, well, Canada's supposed to wipe through Czechia. It's not even close. The coach of Czechia is on record saying, well, we know we can't beat these guys twice in a row. So we mailed it in for the first game of the tournament, and now we're going to actually go out there and try. But if you watch the World Juniors, Czechia's got Canada's number. They've been beating them consistently. Point being that is I told him in 5 years from now, you're not going to look at this like, oh, Canada's easily going to smoke these guys, is that they're going to have just as good of a team as us 5 years from now. I'm sitting watching the game. They got just as good of a team as us right now. Their goalie, man, he played on fire. But yeah, listen, now let's go to Texas where hockey is not a thing and talk about 14 fights and make a little bit of money, Paul. That's what it's all about.
That is not true. That's not true. Dallas Stars, good hockey team.
Well, Finland's down 2-0 right now, and their entire Dallas Stars roster is basically their team.
It's true. Houston doesn't have a team, though. Houston, UFC Houston. We were talking about before we went on the air here about, like, you know, Texas used to be known for having, like, a horrible commission. It's like a lot of those, like, regional judges don't really get too many looks. Like, they may be judging the first 4 fights, maybe 5 fights, but it's like once you get to the main card, it's your Sal D'Amato's. It's your, you know, it's the same refs that we have judges that we have that are, regardless of where you take them on the planet, they're incompetent. So, any sort of home cooking type of stuff, I'm not really seeing it. It's not really something I factored in to how I handicap this week, but I'm sure we'll see something crazy.
I used to, man, because Texas was notorious for they backed their guys, and you'd be sitting there in a tight split decision knowing you lost in your heart, and they'd be like, first judge 29-20, second judge 29-20, the third judge Davy Crockett scores it, and you're like, oh, Davy Crockett's judging, yeah, I'm in. They loved Texas. But yeah, now they bring out the same Chris Lees and Sal D'Amato's, and you never really know what's going to go where. So, yeah, let's look for finishes and people who are going to win decisively.
100%. All right, main event. We've got Sean Strickland taking on Anthony Fluffy Hernandez. Fluffy is about a minus 270 favorite to come back on Strickland plus 230. My initial thoughts here is, like, Strickland hasn't really shown knockout power, and I feel like that's what you have to do to get Anthony Fluffy Hernandez out of there. When he does lose, it's usually in pretty devastating fashion. He gets his head knocked off. Guy's on a hell of a run right now, running through the entire division, and no one's going to out cardio him. You know, people will say, oh, Strickland trains a whole bunch of, wrestling. He'll be ready for it. It's possible. It's possible, but like Strickland's also the guy who went in there against Alex Pereira after an entire training camp. I watched a clip with like Eric Nixick this week where he was just like, we trained wrestling with like ankle eye of that entire camp. And then like we told him like in the first minute, you should probably shoot on this guy. And then as they were walking out, it's like, let me know when it's like halfway through the first round. So it's like once Strickland gets out there, like I wouldn't be shocked to see like someone like Strickland who for better or for worse, and usually it's for worse, it's almost like a point of pride. Like, oh, everyone thinks this guy's a better grappler than me. I'm going to like shoot on him or do something stupid like that. Strickland could win this fight. In theory, it's just like, you know, shoot takedowns. You got the cardio to go five rounds. That's for damn sure. And just box this guy up on the feet. But it's hard for me to get to that financially. I think Fluffy wins. I think Fluffy probably by decision, maybe a late finish. But Strickland could have some moments early. Maybe the takedowns are tough for Fluffy a little bit early. But I just don't know if Strickland's going to stick to a proper, you know, shoot sprawl, box him up type of game plan. Like too much like, you know, little like limp, like little flip kicks from the, you know, from like the, you know, crouching tiger, hidden dragon type of stance. Like we see that type of stuff with Strickland, makes it a hard click even at +230. What are your thoughts on the main event?
Yeah, if you knew for sure you were getting like a closer to a prime version of Sean Strickland, then I think that this price is outrageous. Sean Strickland's got historically very good takedown defense. And beyond that, if you do manage to take him down, holding him down is a whole different problem on its own. Guy spent years in Temecula, California with Team Quest, Dan Henderson. Same thing with his buddy Chris Curtis. What gives these guys that aren't traditional wrestlers, their background's not wrestling, the ability to have such great takedown defense is the level they trained at for a long time. You saw Dricus du Plessis managed to get six takedowns on him in the first fight, 6 of 11, and only had 2 minutes of control time out of that. So again, I think we all agree that Sean Strickland's a better striker than Anthony Hernandez. So it really comes down to, and also Hernandez is a cardio machine. Sean Strickland's a cardio machine. He can go 25 minutes. He's not one to fatigue. So if he can stuff the takedowns and keep up the pace, then he wins his feet on the he wins his fight on the standing. On top of all that, it's just a big plus money price tag to be hanging out on him. So if it's a winnable fight and he's big plus money and he's got the tools to pull it off, and by the way, Sean Strickland's had 6 fights in the UFC go to split decision. So if you're betting him as a 3-1 favorite, this fight's going to be real close and subjective to the crappy judges. But if you're betting him as a 2-1 underdog, you can get a big plus money price tag on him. You're going to feel way better about it. That whole argument for me anyways comes back to if he was in a prime version or a closer to prime. I don't know if that's the case. And my reasoning there is he beats Israel Adesanya, wins the title. He's only fought 3 times since then. The first Dricus fight, everybody thought he won, right? He outstruck him 173 to 137. But it's death by 1,000 cuts. He doesn't have that big power. So in all, remember I said he had 6 split decisions? All 6 of the split decisions, he outstruck his opponent in all 6 of them. But you're still at the mercy of the judges saying, but he's not really doing anything. How many times have you seen him land 182 against Paulo Costa? Boring fight. 128 against Dricus. 173 against Dricus. 137 versus Israel Adesanya. None of those fights are particularly memorable. And they weren't all that entertaining. So his style's just not enough for me. Then the other problem is he fights Dricus the first time. I scored it for Sean Strickland. Then he fights Paulo Costa in a layup to a split decision against Paulo Costa. Again, I thought he won, but it seemed to me like, you know what, maybe he's starting to slow down a little bit. The rematch versus Dricus, not nearly as competitive as the first. So now he's actually turning 35 on the day of weigh-ins. So next Friday, he turns 35 years old. Because of the suspension from him and Curtis storming the cage at that Tough Enough event, he's not fought in a year, and he's a multimillionaire. And if you follow him on social media, he's pretty active. He's doing stuff. Just don't know that he's down to go 25 minutes of wrestling with Anthony Hernandez. And therefore, I feel like Anthony Hernandez does enough to edge it on the scorecards. It's likely going to scorecards. I don't think he knocks out Sean Strickland. I don't think he submits Sean Strickland. But 25 minutes, lots of takedowns. He's built for 5 rounds of action. He is definitely a cardio machine. But his striking has gotten better. His wrestling, good, but it's more so his transitions and his ability to grab onto a submission. And you look at some of Anthony Hernandez's fights, a prime example would be him versus Brandon Allen. It's like he only had 4 takedowns in that fight, but he had 10 minutes of control time. It's like he doesn't, once he gets on top of you, he don't go nowhere. If you do buck him off, he's going to chain wrestle you and get it back to the ground. If you do reverse to get on top, he's reversing. So for a guy that's 35, hasn't fought in a year, and has kind of looked a little bit deflated his last 2 fights, is a multi-millionaire, I don't know that he's the best version of himself. Hernandez winning in a main event against a former champion in Sean Strickland in Texas, and his last name is Hernandez. This is what his career needs. This is what he needs. That's not lost on him. So I think he'll have a competitive version of Anthony that gets him out, or not gets him out of there, but just ends up picking up more rounds than not. Maybe he gets outstruck in some spots, but not enough to knock him out. And the judges are probably going to weigh heavy on the ground and pound and the submission attempts and the constant work rate which Anthony Hernandez puts up. Last thing I will leave you with, though, is this money line is no good. And Anthony Hernandez is not a first-round guy at all. Like, you look to his fight with Brandon Allen, he lost the first round. His fight with Michelle Pereira, he almost got finished in the first round with a body shot. His fight with Kevin Holland, people will remember, was 39 seconds into the first round. And people don't really remember that Marcus Perez fight its way back. Perez hurts him a bunch standing, and then Anaconda chokes him. One that didn't age well because Perez is just kind of a journeyman guy. Point being that Sean Strickland may win the first round. Guys have done that before. This line instantly goes to minus 115, minus 120, Anthony Hernandez, and that's way more to my liking than what it currently sits at pre-flop. So I'm looking to live bet Hernandez after a round. And if, like, God forbid, even Sean Strickland's got enough power to knock out Anthony Hernandez, get it over with in the first round, and I wouldn't have to feel so bad about it. But for parlay purposes, for PRP purposes, hedge out opportunity, it's Hernandez for me.
We got Jeff Neal taking on Uros Medic in the co-main event. Neal minus 212 favorite to come back on Medic plus 182. Apparently, Jeff Neal has quit drinking. He had like an interview this week saying that like he was like doing pretty bad. Yeah, he's been fighting top level guys, you know, with like real personal issues. I guess Ian Gary was kind of pointing towards those when he did those, you know, the mugshot t-shirt and all that other type of stuff.
DUI with a handgun in the car, yeah.
But yeah, he hasn't drank in like 3 months, which doesn't sound like much, but I think it was B Rizzle in our chat. I may be wrong. He did mention that, it's been 3 months, but like that's 3 months and that's over Christmas holidays, which is like if you have a drinking problem, you have a, you know, if you have a party problem with all those types of distractions and stuff, that would be one of the harder times to actually follow through with it. And this is all believing somebody who's in an interview, whether he's actually telling the truth or not. But that's neither here nor there. Medic under machine either finishes or gets finished. Neil hasn't really been finishing too many guys. Has been getting finished a little bit himself, but he's been fighting a much higher level of competition. I'm going to buy into the narrative that Jeff Neal has, you know, fixed up a few things in his life. This is the easiest fight he's had in quite some time. I've got some, more interest, and it's a chalky total, but like Medic basically doesn't get out of the first round. The minus 189 to the under 1.5, it's like, it's chalky, but it's like, I don't see these guys going more than 5 minutes. Neil's the pick for me, but give me unders. Fight doesn't go to decision as parlay pieces. Your thoughts here?
Well, knowing that he's been sick, I mean, on one hand, you could look at it like, well, he's been sober for 3 months and he fought all those other guys when he wasn't sober. And there's been other cases of guys like Nick Dalby, who was drunk in the UFC and like pretty damn good, to be honest with you. So it's not the end of the world. The more so the issue is that he's 35 years old now, and it doesn't sound like he quit drinking because he had an epiphany and a light went off in his head. It sounded like he quit drinking because he went to the doctors, and the doctor was like, you're going to have organ failure, and you're in really bad shape. So you get sober, you get in the gym, and the older you get, is it irreversible damage? Like, if you've been drinking heavy for 10, 15, 20 years, does that just go away in 3 months? Like, I don't know. I'd love to just say it's the world's greatest gimmick, because if he just threw that out there, and it's not true, and you're getting this kind of line, what's up? You're getting the most ridiculously low line on Jeff Neal over Uros Medic. You're either going to feel like the biggest king of the world with such easy money hitting on Jeff Neal, or you're falling for the world's biggest trap. It's just hard to figure out which one it is. Because on paper, I'm agreeing with you 100%. I don't really see how Yuris Menich gets this thing done. Like, he's prone to, he can knock you out, sure, but he's very prone to getting knocked out himself. I mean, even in some of the fights where he's been submitted, it's like he's getting hurt standing, or the fights where he'll win, like Gilbert Urbina, it's like he got dropped by Gilbert Urbina in the opening 40 seconds of the fight. Mm-hmm. So he kind of talked himself into the situation, because as entertaining as he is, and he's, I can't say he's the greatest fighter from Alaska FC of all time, because, like, surprisingly, there's been a couple. But for a guy, he's like, he's punching way over his weight, and he's doing well. But if you look at some of these fights, he hits a spinning back fist on Matthew Selmelsberger, right? Knocks him with a spinning back fist. Another fight he got knocked down in prior to getting a knockout himself. But all the same, no bonus off of it. His last two fights, he knocks out Gilbert Urbina in 1:03. Follows that up by knocking out Muslim Solikov in 1:03. Neither of them got bonuses. Goes on the mic after the last one with Solikov and says, hey, man, I guess it's not about the money for me. It's about the honor and the prestige and, you know, to say I got a performance bonus. And it sounded like, and they didn't give him one. It sounded like, okay, you want to beg for a bonus? Why don't you start fighting some better guys that aren't Gilbert Urbina or a mid-40s Muslim Solikov? Why don't you fight a perennial contender, a top 10 guy, a guy that's fought all the best guys in the division and done quite well for himself, and Jeff Neal? And so this is a big step up comparatively to what he's been fighting. If Jeff Neal fights Muslim Solikov or Gilbert Urbina or Puenhele Soriano or Tim Means, I love Tim Means, but I'm thinking he puts them all away at the same. If it was roles reversed and you've got Yuris Medic having to fight Carlos Prates or Rafael Dos Anjos or Ian Machado Gary or Shavkat Rakhmonov, like, I don't think he's getting out of the first round against any of those guys. Yet Neal was giving Rakhmonov a go. Yeah, I got subbed in the third, but the second round especially, it's like, man, this guy's landing hands. The Gary fight, I thought he lost, but it was, he held him to a split decision. These guys are right at the top of the food chain. So it'd be cool if the UFC was like, hey, man, we heard your story. We heard you're having a rough time. We heard you're getting healthy again. We're going to give you a fight that you can go out there and look good in and get a highlight and get paid. Why don't you fight Yuris Medich? And it's less than 2-1. So if it is a trap, I'm going to fall over the trap, Paul Shaughnessy, because I think Jeff puts it on him. Now, wait for weigh-ins. Wait till he makes weight. Kind of look at that form he's in. But his back's up against the wall, and I think he's going to come out and perform.
Yeah, Neal KO -133.
Any round? -133. Yeah. Anyway. That looks like the way to go.
That gets you, yeah, it gets you like basically 100 points off of his money line. I mean, I'd be very surprised if this fight goes to decision. Crazier things have happened, of course, but, you know, that's just not the way Medich fights. Like, he hasn't been out of the first round in quite some time.
And the only guy to knock out Jeff Neal in the last 11 years. Or sorry, 9 years. Kratzis. In the last 9 years. Yeah, and it's a spinning back elbow with 1 second left in the round. And if you watch back the round, he's losing it. Not much is happening, but, like, he's not too bad. And he's fighting Carlos Prates. How do you think Prates does against Yuris Medich? You know, probably not to the 459 mark of the first round.
Yeah, 103, 31 seconds. So since in the last calendar, like in the last 13 months, Yuris Medich has 2-1 with
3 minutes
of minute and 30 set, or sorry, 2 minutes and 37 seconds worth of fight time. Under machine. Moving on down, we have Mel Costa taking on Dynamite Dan Ige. No longer Mr. 50K, because, you know, the bonus is done changed. Mel Costa -210 favorite to come back on Ige +180. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I know I said at the first show of the year, I was like, I'm not going to chase as many of these, like, it's the value side. And, like, Sean Strickland's the value side, and I avoided that one. But, like, I think I'm going to fall for the value side Dan Ige trap here. This could obviously look a lot, you know, not so good. But, again, at plus money, I think Dan Ige is one of these guys that's always going to go and give you a 100% go. But more importantly than that, let's just talk about his last four fights. He takes a round off Diego Lopez on like an hour's notice. And who cares if he had a full camp or not for that fight, which he obviously didn't, but he took a round off Diego Lopez. It's nice. Then the Lerone Murphy fight, he took a round off Lerone Murphy. Like, he loses both of them, clearly, 29-28. But, like, he's operating at a real high level here. And then a knockdown over Lerone Murphy, is all, it's all well and good. The fight with Sean Woodson, I thought he looked awful. The first round, Woodson's so big and has such a long jab. It's like he just can't figure him out. Ige fights at 145. He's a career 145er. But I think this guy could have made 135 in a different life because he's 5'7", decent reach on him, but he's not the biggest guy at the weight class. He fights monsters like Lopez and Murphy. But in the Woodson fight, it's tricky for the first two rounds. Point being, in the third round, he really turns it up and then finds the knockout. His last fight with Patricio Freite, former Bellator champion, class guy, in my opinion, he loses the first two rounds getting taken down. He wins the third round coming on strong. So when you look at Lopez, Lerone Murphy, Patricio Freite, none of these guys 30-27'd him. He's able to win at least one round off all of them, and then, of course, did knock out Sean Woodson in the third of that affair. Milk seems to slow down a little bit. He lost the third round against Julian Arosa, two fights back. Christian Rodriguez, real close fight. Andre Feely stuck his own head into a weird choke. Shalian Nurmagomedov took a round off him and was able to take him down four times. If you were to, again, and this is just comparatively speaking, if you were to compare the level of opposition, how does Milk do against these guys that Dan Ige is fighting? Whereas Dan could be on the same winning streak that he's on if he got to fight Christian Rodriguez and Julian Arosa. That would be right up his wheelhouse. So if you're going to hang this kind of plus money over Dan Ige, well, really the bet here is fight goes the distance over 2.5 rounds because it's a Dan Ige fight. But if you know this fight's probably going to decision and you know that Dan Ige is more likely to win the third round, Milk wins the first, Dan wins the third, and we've got suspect judging by suspect commission members and suspect parts of the country. Love Texas. I'm just saying the commission hasn't historically been great. And you can just keep this to a close decision. I want that plus money price tag for sure. Milk's a little unproven, right? The biggest win on his record is, I don't know, Morgan Sherry?
No, he lost to Steve.
He beat Steve.
Andre Feely? Feely just kind of like
stuck his head in the choke. It was weird.
The struggle with Milk is like when you're looking for like a time to jump on Dan Ige is plus money. You know he's going to give you 100% effort single time he's in there. And his big issue, even though he's spent all this time training with the Dagestanis and everything like that, is. And Ali Abdelaziz.
That's the biggest one. Just pay the judges.
But the thing is like his wrestling, his takedown defense has always been bad. But it's like I haven't seen enough from Melk's offensive wrestling game. I mean, Julian Arosa was 3-2 in offensive, takedowns. Feely got the one takedown. It was pretty easy. Christian Rodriguez had 6 takedowns on him to 1 coming back the other way. It's not out of the realm of possibility that Milk could get a takedown here and there, but it's not really his game. And then like you look at like their reach, Melk's usually pretty long compared to some of his opponents, but Dan Ige somehow has the same reach as him at 71 inches. So if this turns into a striking affair between the two of these guys, I think at plus 180, it's pretty clearly Dogger Pass.
I'll bring up one more thing that you made me remember, which is a great point, right? So the only fight that Milk decided to offensively wrestle hard the way that Ige would require to beat Ige, right? That level of wrestling is when he fought Steve Garcia. First round, he went 2-for-9 on takedowns with 4 minutes and 41 seconds of control time. Second round, he came out absolutely spent and got knocked out a minute in the second round. He hasn't tried to wrestle hard since then. Yeah, him and Arosa exchanged takedowns, but Arosa got the better of those takedowns. So you're right, man. I got a Dan Ige play out of this. And if you really want to get jiggy with it, like, Ige's got knockout power. Do not overlook it. But likely Ige by decision.
Could see it. The KO just doesn't seem too likely. We haven't, Milk hasn't shown.
Steve knocked him out, but I'll give him a pass on that one.
Yeah, Steve knocks everybody out.
He's amazing.
I don't know. I don't know if I'm going to get. What is the decision? What is the number on that? I don't know if I would. For me, myself, I just don't know if I'm going to get greedy on that, but wouldn't fault you for taking that. So yeah, his decision prop and his KO prop are pretty much identical, around plus 500 in that range for both of them. Obviously, he ain't subbing anything. I'll probably just stick to the plus 180 money line and be on my way. Won't be mad either way. But yeah, sounds like we are on the same dog with Dynamite Dan Ige. All right, moving on down, we've got Sergey Spivak taking on Ante Delia. Mediocre heavyweights here. -135 for Delia, +115 for Spivak. Hot takes here, Code?
You're probably just chasing the plus money. This one is more of a system play in that middling UFC heavyweights, and I can get plus money on them, then why not? And I honestly did start the week thinking Ante probably just walks right through him. Spivak's really stiff on his feet. His chin's not great. Ante's got big old dynamite power. Probably just dog walks him and knocks him out in the first round. If he doesn't get him out of there in the first round, that's when things become interesting. And then I start getting hung up on that exact idea of what if it does get out of the first round. Because Ante, my Croatian brother, number three greatest heavyweight in MMA next to Stipe and Mirko Krokop, he doesn't got a gas tank on him. Now, you're the most hardcore of the hardcore, so you'll be able to just know these fights when we talk back on them. But like when he lost the first time against Bruno Capoloza in PFL, Capoloza's an old 205er, moved up, knocked him out. They ran it back. Capoloza beat him again, but he gassed out after the first round. More concerning than that one is he fought Maurice Greene to a decision. And he gassed hard after the first round against Maurice Greene. Not good. Then Valentin Moldovsky knocks him out. This one's problematic because Moldovsky has only finished one of his last 10 wins. And he happened to do it in the first round against Ante. So now Ante's been knocked out by a 205er in 46 seconds. He's been knocked out to one of the biggest pillow-handed guys the division's ever seen in Moldovsky. Jumps into the UFC, beats Marcin Tybura, quality win, and then walks into Waldo Cortez Acosta, which there's an eye poke and there's a break, and then he resumes it. But really the bottom line is Waldo hits him back and he can't really step up to it. This guy was losing to PFL-level talent. I think he's capable of losing. I think if he was on an Octagon MMA card or he was on a KSW card, like you think Philip DeFries is losing to this guy? Like, I don't think he's a world-class operator by no means. He's 35 years old. He most definitely has chin issues, but God, they've matched him up extremely well. All these guys, Jorgen De Castro, Waldo Cortez Acosta, Maurice Greene, Matheus Scheffel, Henan Ferreira, Shelton Grace can wrestle. Shelton Grace can wrestle. For the most part, he's fought mostly strikers. But when you look back to the early portion of his career, he struggles mightily with his grappling. And so you got a guy that really, that for sure, is not a high-level grappler. He doesn't really got a deep gas tank, doesn't really have a good chin. He's not really at this level, and he's a sizable enough favorite over a guy that, you know, is UFC caliber. We all love to harp on the UFC heavyweights. Everybody loves it. Hilarious. The memes. Oh, so fun, so fun, so fun. If you were to look at the heavyweight division and eliminate 10 of them, it's easy. But Spivak's actually one of the guys you'd leave on there. You're not bad. He loses to good guys. But outside of that, he's proven to be pretty serviceable. I'll admit his last time out against Waldo, he didn't look great, but he went to decision. He was able to go the 15 minutes, and he got two takedowns out of it. Jelton Almeida TKOs him. It's a bad look. But he starts off the fight getting a takedown of his own. Takes Jelton's back. Not a bad transition. Cyril Gane got to the second round with him. It's a world champion. Derek Lewis took him down six times in the first round and subbed him. Augusto Sakai took him down six times. Greg Hardy took him down three times in the first round and subbed him. He's able to get to the takedowns. He's able to maybe fight a round and a half, two rounds, maybe go to the third if need be. And whereas you could knock him out, like Jelton beat him up on the ground. Tom Aspinall is Tom Aspinall. Cyril Gane is Cyril Gane. Yeah, well, I don't think Ante's those guys. So really, this is like a -120 Ante or a even money fight as far as I'm concerned. Because it's not priced like that and they're heavyweights. I didn't get a good dog shot on Spivak. I do have a lot of favorites on this card, but Ige and Spivak are two guys I think that are very capable of performing. And hopefully they come through for me.
Yeah, I have like next to no conviction on this fight whatsoever.
Yeah, one's guy getting knocked here, the other guy's going to tire and get subbed.
Very, very possible that, I mean, if Delia wins, I feel like that, you know, Delia round one just comes out, absolutely melts him in the first few minutes. And, you know, that's probably most of his win condition. But yeah, if he doesn't do that, Spivak's able to slow it down up against the fence, get takedowns, hold position, get to top control. Like, I think there's a massive grappling edge for Spivak if he gets it down there. Doesn't have too many subs on his record, but I don't think that's out of the realm of possibility. dogger pass from a betting perspective, but like I'm not letting Sergey Spivak ruin my weekend. Jacoby Smith taking on Josiah Harrell. Jacoby Smith, a -255 favorite to come back on Harrell, who you cashed a big dog ticket on LFA, I believe, not that long ago, correct?
Yeah, he came through hard.
Came through hard. And Jacoby Smith was supposed to be in this fight against who? I forgot.
Jacoby Smith was originally going to fight Seung Hyo Koh.
Prospects. That was going to be a badass fight.
I know.
That was going to be a badass fight. Where are you at with this fight, Code?
Well, I think Harrell, he's got to jump on it. I mean, this guy's got a cool little story, right? Young guy, wrestled in college. Again, good athlete, heavy hands on him. College wrestling experience, of course, that we love at this level. And then he signs with the UFC after going 9-0 in the regional scene. He signs with the UFC back in 2023. So July 2023, just under 3 years ago, he signs to fight Jack Della Maddalena in his UFC debut. They do a pre-fight scan. Turns out he's got like I wouldn't call it a brain bleed. Maybe I wouldn't even really call it a clot either. Well, he's got a brain irregularity. So they're like, we can't let you fight. And therefore, they just rescind the contract and he goes back to the regional scene. End up taking a year and a half off, gets every medical test in order. UFC's still not willing to touch it right away. But he gets welcomed back to Ohio Combat League and then eventually, as you mentioned, LFA. And he's looked good since then. Beats Melvin Gillard. That one obviously doesn't count for anything. Big name, but over the hill. But the win over Keegan Genrich is a college wrestler. He's a heck of a grappler. You know, he looked really good in that fight. Follows it up by beating that Beksmirza Dosmatov over on LFA and cashes as a pretty sizable underdog. First round of that fight is so super competitive. Second and the third round, you see him really, Josiah, start to pull through. And again, he's a good athletic guy. Still only 27 years old. Has a solid pedigree all around. He's now 11-0. I think he's doing all the right things. It's just now you're jumping into a second UFC spot on short notice against what could be the best prospect in the division. I mean, Jacoby Smith, you could talk about his wrestling credentials for days. The guy is a stud athlete. He's a phenomenal wrestler. He's training out of Fortis MMA in Dallas, Texas. I'm sure the live crowd is going to be heavily in his favor. And the guy is just like can kind of do it all. I didn't love his last fight against Nico Price, where he kind of, I wouldn't say played with his food, but just didn't really finish when he could have. Eventually finished late in the second round, but was otherwise just having his way. He allowed Price to hit him a little bit. Again, it wasn't like this guy's going to go places 100%. It was kind of a down performance, but what I remind myself is that he's still young in his MMA career. One, two, if you're going to get some round time against a guy, it should be Nico Price. He's really not a threat at this point. I can take him down whenever I want. I can smash him on the ground. I can stand with him a little bit as well. His fight on the Contender Series against Christian Savoy, not a great level of guy. Preston Parsons, not the greatest level of guy, but you see he's got natural power in both hands. He's fast twitch muscle, explosive athlete, has the wrestling background. Kind of just feel like he's the better all-around guy, but I don't want to discredit Harrell. And what's the best line on market right now for this fight?
Currently, best price on Smith -255 for Smith.
Yeah, I think and that's, wins,
at, that's at Bet Online. And then best Harrell price +240 at American books.
And there's no over under yet because the fight just kind of got announced not that long ago.
I bet you there is. Just let her load up here. 1.5 -190. To the over.
And honestly, they both hit fairly hard. Jacoby Smith especially so. I don't actually love those totals. I don't know. It's tough when you got two good prospects that you like. Like, realistically looking, they're both 11-0. And they're both good-looking prospects. And they're both college wrestlers. Jacoby Smith way more accomplished, but he's 3 years older as well. So to pay a big price tag, it is short notice. I don't love it, but...
Harrell's usually a lightweight, so he's taking a step up in comp or
Josiah. No, he's swimming at 170.
Okay, he's given up a lot of size. If UFC stats can be trusted, 3 inches in height, 4 inches in reach, that's not going to be helpful because, like, sure, Jacoby Smith had some issues against Nico Price last time out, but it's like Nico Price is like 6 feet tall.
40 pro fights, been in the UFC forever. Yeah, no, I hear you. It's not exactly, these are not the easiest of opponents, but what you're seeing with these super prospects, and they did it last week, not super prospects, that Donchenko guy's not great.
No.
But he just won the Ultimate Fighter. He's got less than 10 pro MMA fights, and he's fighting Alex Morono. It didn't really make sense. And, you know, even Atiba Gotye, we love him as a prospect. And Jacoby Smith in ways, way different fight style, but in ways, he's one of these guys that the first time you see him, all of a sudden you're on board and you want to ride that train. Atiba can go to the top. This guy can go to the highest level of the sport, but there's going to be bumps in the road, and it just depends on certain matchmaking. You know, it's not exactly easy to fight a guy. Well, he's old, he's older, he's more experienced, and he knows a few tricks up his sleeve, and Jacoby Smith doesn't know how to pace himself. But yeah, for a guy that has a wrestling base to come out with the kind of striking skills that he does have, it's pretty impressive. And then namely, when I look at that last fight, Harrell in LFA against Dosmatov, yeah. Right, is that the first round Dosmatov was doing perfectly fine. Then Dosmatov gassed out, which is where Josiah Harrell took over, right? Jacoby Smith's not really as prone to gas out. Plus, he's at a full fight camp and you haven't. And therefore, if he has a good first two rounds, you getting a late stoppage is going to be key, and I don't really know that it happens. Sometimes when a guy hasn't lost, it's hard to say what his weakness is, right? And in Harrell's case, he hasn't lost, but you can at least point out a few of these moments where good guys have had certain, maybe not exposed, but just had certain luck in certain departments. The thing is, Dosmatov can wrestle, and Keegan Genridge can wrestle too, and he beat both of them. So now you got Jacoby Smith, who can just wrestle. This is not bad. The tipping point for me is that Jacoby Smith doesn't just wrestle, he can hit sufficiently hard, man. I do think at the end of the day, he ends up getting the win. I put it on the top line. I see it being a competitive enough fight. I like both guys, but ultimately the better prospect, and not even the better prospect, one guy's 3 years younger, right? Run this back in 3 years from now, it's maybe completely different. But as of their meeting right now, Jacoby Smith's a little further along in his martial arts journey, a little more well-rounded, and therefore ends up getting the win. Plus, it's in Texas, and he's a star down there. Star, you know, relatively speaking. But if it's close and it's a wrestling affair, there's not a finish, the crowd's behind him. Maybe if he needs that little extra ounce of energy, they're hollering his name. Don't matter. Any means necessary, but it'll get done one way or another. So Jacoby Smith for me.
Moving on down, we got Michel Pereira taking on Zach Reese. Pereira is a minus 150 favorite to come back on Reese, plus 130. I wish I knew what type of Michel Pereira was going to come out.
Well, you never will.
Because the old guy with the crazy, you know, backflip spinning techniques. I mean, it, at the very least, would make this a very, very fun fight. If he comes out very, very technical and, you know, minds his P's and Q's, which we've seen a lot of because of, you know, I feel like the fan base kind of like, fan base, maybe Dana a little bit, kind of like cyber bullied this guy into, you know, not being who he was, which was, he was an entertainer. Like, we were watching Karate Combat the other day, and we were just like, let's get Michel Pereira out of the UFC. Like, he's never gonna be more than a, at best, fringe top 15 guy, probably more like 25th, 30th, like in that range type of guy. And that's totally fine, because when he's exciting, when he's fun, he's a fan favorite. When you put him in some of these other fights, Abus Magomedov, where it's like, yeah, those stats, 73 to 78, it's like,
that's a lie.
That's a damn lie, because he didn't really get going until the third round. And even the third round, he looked so lethargic. Like, those significant strikes don't really add up if you watch that fight back. I mean, Anthony Fluffy Hernandez is just like, he showed a lot of heart, but it's just like, he can't really wrestle, especially against that type of level of competition. And then he got knocked out by Kyle Daukaus, who's on a nice little career surge since last time, though. The wins, you know, two submission wins over Poteria and Mikey O'Baby. When he's electric, when he's fun, he's super, super fun. Is Zach Reese the guy to bring him out of it? I think so. I think it's going to be a fun kind of a YOLO type of performance from Pereira. I'd like to know for sure that that's what's going to happen. He doesn't come out here and play patty cake for the first 7.5 minutes. But I don't believe that Michel Pereira comes out and does some high-flying type of stuff. It is Zach Reese's, you know, Zach Reese trains in Houston. This is a home. I don't know if it's his hometown, but it's like it's where he lives right now. So there is some hometown favoritism, I suppose. He was talking in an interview about how like all everybody's asking him for tickets, and he's like, the UFC doesn't give me that many tickets. You're going to have to buy tickets to come see me, okay? To like his friends and family. But I want to believe in Pereira one more time. But I mean, if he loses this fight, like he's as good as gone, right? Pereira's the pick for me. What about you?
Yeah, yeah. If he loses this fight, he'll be joining Chris Barnett and Wing C over in Karate Combat, where freak show fighters go, because that's kind of been his style. Now, you mentioned he's a fringe top 15 contender. Yeah, honestly, he's a fringe top 10 contender at 170. But he's just way too big, and then he moves up to 185, and now he's a fringe 25 guy, as Paul mentioned. He's not quite the same explosiveness. He's not quite the same size. You look at his age, he's 32. So it's like, what's going on here? But it's the 45 pro fights. It's the multiple weight cuts to 170 that wrecked his body. It's the multiple weight misses at 170. Missed against Tristan Connolly, had his fight canceled against Stephen Wonderboy Thompson at weigh-ins. Like, this, not... I bet you he's wrecked his body pretty good. And so now that he's only 32 years old, but even at 185, you're just not really seeing that same explosiveness out of him. And part of that is the opponents he's been fighting, but part of it is just he's not trustworthy. The great thing about this fight is that he's a slight favorite, but it's close enough to even money, which is where I like betting Michel Pereira as an underdog or even money, because he does still have the ability to beat anybody if he can turn it on, which Paul started this entire segment off. The exact answer here, it's like, what kind of version are you getting of him? You're just never going to know. But if you watch back the Anthony Hernandez fight, he almost beats him in the first round. Poteria beat him in the first round. Mikey O beat him in the first round. Andre Petroski beats him in the first round. That's all great. Even though he didn't win that fight in the first round, he made it to the fifth. He went the distance with Abus Magomedov. Kyle Daukaus is a giant of a man. I'm not really faulting him. He's been fighting good guys. Now, three-fight losing streak, knows he has to win. They've given him a really winnable fight for multiple reasons. What's Michel Pereira's most likely path of victory? Just landing a quick knockout, right? Okay, well, Zach Reese is the kind of guy that you could just maybe quickly knock out. Like, I'll give him a pass that Cody Brundage knocked him out only because it was a powerbomb. But the Bakoev fight, he knocks him out from closed guard. He's sitting in his guard and just hammers him twice in the face, and Reese goes out. Above that, he went the distance with Dusko Todorovic. What? And he got taken down four times by Dusko. And Jackson McVay is this close to having him out of there. Referee bails him out a little bit. So could Pereira knock him out? Yeah, 100%. And Reese, when he does get finished, it's typically early, right? So it kind of falls into his plan. But beyond that, Michel Pereira can low-key wrestle. I know people don't really think of him as a wrestler, but he's fighting Anthony Hernandez and Abus Magomedov. Like, prior to that, he has taken down Nico Price three times. People will remember the backflip over the guard. Two takedowns on Chaos Williams, two takedowns on Diego Sanchez, had taken down Tristan Connolly, had taken down Zalib Imadeyev. I think if you're giving up takedowns to Dusko, and the problem with Zach Reese is he allows you to take him down because he's got such a good guard. He's got such a good armbar and a triangle choke that he doesn't even fend off these takedowns. Well, if Pereira beats you standing, we all know that's a possibility. If Pereira shoots a takedown and just sits up in your guard and starts smashing you, it's a possibility that that opens up as well. And then the third thing is, it's like, okay, so Pereira can win on the feet, and theoretically speaking, he may be able to win this fight on the ground. The third thing is Pereira's cardio. It just ain't it. Reese's cardio is arguably worse. He's gassed out against Jackson McVay. He's gassed out against Dusko Todorovic. He went the distance with Jose Medina, who I guess is known for his toughness. But I think you know what I'm getting at on this. I wouldn't feel good betting Reese over many people. If you told me Reese was a plus 200 underdog or a plus 300 underdog in this matchup, yeah, well, Pereira's a 50-50 guy. I don't want no part of that. But at 50-50 number, which sort of is, I want the more dangerous guy. I want the guy that's more able to capitalize. And Reese isn't, oh, yeah, my hometown crowd or my friends and family are all in attendance. I'm going to feed off that. He's got durability issues, right? The crowd could be chanting your name. You're unconscious. What's the matter? Mm-hmm. So, yeah. And then Pereira has nothing to lose. He's going to get cut, right? So you might as well throw the flying knee. You might as well throw the hook kick. You might as well do a cartwheel. And Paul, you got Fight Metric open in front of you right there?
Fight Metric?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, just stats, sure. Stats. Okay, so go back to the full card. You click on Dan Ige, for example. Just click on Dan Ige. Look at that nickname for Dan Ige. 100K.
Oh,
Pereira is incentivized to do the cartwheel and run off the cage. And this is good enough for Cody Saftick, Paul Shaughnessy. So sign me up for Pereira to, it's not an upset, he's a slight favorite, but to make a little magic happen and cash in for the boys.
I hope so. I mean, Pereira round one plus 316 at one of the books that I have access to. I'm only human. Whether it's a KO or sub, like, his sub price is pretty wide. I think KO is way more likely, but club and subs obviously in play, that type of situation. So I can't really inside the distance is like plus 120. Don't hate that. But the round one plus 316, I hope he comes out flying high and doing some crazy stuff, because that's the Michel Pereira that I love.
If the books wanted to be real generous, which they never will, if you could give me a Zach Reese wins by disqualification and that was just the only bet on the ticket, I'd be tempted. Because I think Pereira is going to do some crazy stuff. And
I hope so.
He's been disqualified before, like the Diego Sanchez fight. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, a fight he was cruising in. So let's get back to that, minus the DQ, and get the win.
The old knockdown, standing back flip to a stomp on the head. Not a high IQ type of play.
No.
But a high entertainment type of play. They'd let that happen in karate combat. That's where Pereira should be. So if he loses, there's a little silver lining that we can probably bet him on Friday nights, and hopefully he gets paid, because here it's pretty tight over there. We got that Carlos Leal taking on Chidi Bang Bang and Jaquani. Minus 125 for Leal, the comeback on Chidi, plus 105. Leal was a pretty big favorite, and then there's a very significant, you know, market move.
Yeah, 260 to 125. That's
about
huge.
A week ago. I think they opened it up far too wide. Like, if you watch Leal, he had a nice little string of wins there, but he's pretty reckless in the pocket. I don't think he's some sort of great wrestler. So then he's got to go toe for toe with, you know, Chidi, who's taller, longer, and hits like a freight train himself. Like, I can understand why this thing got closer to a pick 'em. I'm tempted to, you know, I guess follow the steam a little bit here and take Chidi in this matchup. I just think that Leal, we saw, you know, pressuring too much, being a little bit too aggressive is what caused him to get absolutely folded last time out as a massive favorite against Muslim Salikov. Like, you're going right back into the hornet's nest here against Chidi, who you kind of have to slow it down against him. You gotta, you know, hold him up against the cage, because, like, if you just want to go toe for toe for this guy, he'll knock you out. So Chidi's the pick for me. What about you?
So the show used to be called Dog or Pass, and we, you know, you take the dog or you just pass, and now we're back to our bookie beatdown, which I prefer, but we don't pass as much. And to me, this is like, if you're going to pass on a fight, you may as well pass on this one. But my pick will be Leal. But if you're a smart man, you're going to pass on this. The line moves significantly, and we don't know why, but this is just my own theories. These guys aren't throwing fights. Isaac Dalgarian didn't throw the fight. The line movement isn't, it's coming in because they know one guy is going to lose. It's the disclosure of an injury that you don't know about. So, for example, Anthony Hernandez, let's say, has a broken wrist. We don't know this. So him versus Michael Johnson is a 50-50 fight. Now it's day of the fight. You're at weigh-ins. You weigh in. You have to do a preform physical. It gets leaked. Oh, and I'm just using it. I don't know what his injury was. I'm just saying. It gets revealed it's X, Y, and Z injury. People start to hammer money on Michael Johnson. The line moves huge. The UFC pulls it. They don't pull it because they think Anthony Hernandez or Michael Johnson are going to take a dive. They're both 20-fight UFC veterans. They're both consummate professionals. They're worried that there's a giant line movement because one guy's hurt, and now people know about it. Now they're hammering it, and it's not in good, I don't know, it's not in good flavor or whatever to put them out there knowing that their guy has a pre-existing injury. Isaac Dalgarian almost would have certainly had an injury. It's why when he shot, he didn't turn the corner. It's why he didn't drive forward. It's why he just flopped. Maybe his neck's hurt. Maybe his back's hurt. He's got something, but financially, he's going to remain committed to the fight. So when I look at this fight, why did the line move that heavy in Chidi and Jaquani's favor? Leal might be hurt. He may have a lingering injury. He's coming off, by the way. Solikov knocked him out in 42 seconds. That was the first time Leal's been finished in a fight ever. He's never been knocked out. He's never been submitted. So maybe he's still concussed. Maybe he's got no confidence. There's something there. But because I don't know what it is, I can't just blindly bet it. So what I have to do is I have to look at the matchup itself. And yeah, for my money's worth,
of reach.
That this is all going to be to Chidi and Jaquani's detriment. And this is my reasoning why. He is 6'3" with an 80-inch reach. It's crazy. But he's 37 years old. And the weight cuts to 170 are awful. Two fights back, he missed against Eliza Zaleski coming in at 172.3. You look back at the majority of his early career, he's a middleweight. He's 6'3" with an 80-inch reach. Now that you're 37 years old, the constant weight cutting, it's very hard on your body. So Jake Matthews, he kind of catches him off guard, catches a kick, grabs the back, grabs the rear naked choke. There's not much to it. It is what it is. But more worrisome is, Baby Mikey O knocks him out in the first round. Gregory Rodriguez knocked him out early in the second round. And then, of course, the Marc-Andre Barrio fight. He absolutely toast Barrio. But I just feel like he does have a kill or be killed style certain times. He's got Muay Thai, traditional Muay Thai, and it allows him to have excellent reach, excellent range, but he's got tall man defense. And Leal doesn't fight at range. He only fights in the pocket, coming forward and bombing you. And so you got to avert one guy's cutting 30 pounds. He's 37 years old, and he has been knocked out a few times. Taking another guy, coming off a knockout loss to a 45-year-old, but all the same, he's going to crash forward. He's going to land those big shots. He's not going to allow you to use your 80-inch reach because he's going to be clubbing you from inside the pocket, right? So Leal's forward pressure style, him coming off a loss, maybe he's a little less reckless. To me, it's just like he's going to hit him with something. And I think when he hits him, Chidi's going to fall down. When he falls down, Leal's going to swarm and get the TKO finish within a round, maybe a round and a half. So Leal under 1.5, Leal by TKO. But it moved like 140 points in like a very short period of time. So if Leal's got a broken left hand, maybe none of this matters. If Leal's, he's been sick all week and he can only fight one round, I don't love it as much. Well, he'll go hard in that first round. But you know what I'm saying? If there's an X factor there that we don't know about that's going to hamper his performance, and it's hard to definitively say, you love this guy and you love this bet. At minus 260, I wouldn't have liked it. At minus 125, I actually enjoy it quite a bit. But the smart thing here is just to avoid it altogether, I think.
Yeah, I mean, that first move there from minus 260, it's just like, you can never really take that seriously. It's more these, because like that took place over the course of like 2 minutes. It eventually, it opened up at, wrong fight there. It opened up plus 220, and that was probably there for no more than 5 minutes. You know what I mean? It's this move from, plus 160, like this consistent move, and then now to a pick 'em. Like, that's the stuff where it's just like, all right, this is a big market move rather than like that initial move from the, the minus 260. Like, that minus 260 Leal, I don't even consider that a real number. You know what I mean? But I do consider the minus 190. And then whatever moved it from 180 all the way up to basically a pick'em price here, like, that's some serious. There's some serious money behind that to move that all the way across the board, across a market. It's interesting. It happened like a week ago. So one of the, big paid touts probably had all of their people. They're all sitting on.
And that's the case. Leal, baby. Let's go.
They're all sitting at like at Njaquani plus 160 tickets out there. That's probably what the situation is, but we'll find out on Saturday night. I'm still going with Chidi. I guess you owe me a shoe.
Remember that, let's double the hawk, because we did
you
have
want, you want to you want like this one. It doesn't seem one of us is like all that. We can go on this one. Go
No. Let me get it back.
So you can cash this one in. Yeah. So if Leal wins, you owe me nothing. We're back to square one. If Njaquani wins, now you owe me two.
Yeah, and I'm only going to let it get up to four. But if it gets up to four, then I will crush the four drinks on the show. And
six-pack Saftic has to happen. I got to go on a run here, baby. It's 2026.
Six-pack Saftic within the first six fights. I'm not going to crush the last one at the end of the show. I'll let you get the full experience. Now, is four beers going to get me drunk? Four beers in a half hour going to get me drunk? Oh, yeah, buddy. I'm like 107 pounds. 100%. Plus, I'm not that big of a drink. So shotgunning the four of them. Make it happen. Okay, sign me up for that. I mean, is it a type of thing you want real money on? No. The kind of thing you want a shoey bet on? Oh, hell yeah. I had a minus
exactly. favorite. And you're, yeah, you owe me one. And one shoey is just so boring. I know people are like, oh, they want to see. Just like, I want to see Cody, like, struggle. I want to see his lip quivering on the program. I want to see him, like, really in pain trying to get through a breakdown of, like, some low-level women's MMA fight. Like, that's what gets me going, you know, in year 10 of us doing this show together. One single shoey, it's just like, I mean, you know, my grandma could do that.
We're actually in year 12, for the record.
See, I'm losing track of the years as they go by here. Mm-hmm. All right, we got Alibi Yildiz taking on Ode Osborne, minus 130 for Yildiz. Comeback on Osborne, plus 110. Who you got here?
So Idris is on the Ultimate Fighter, and even prior to the Ultimate Fighter, he looks pretty good on the Kazakh regional scene. Looks like he's got the parts. Guy can wrestle. Guy, you know, physical, excellent shape. It looks like he's the best guy in the Ultimate Fighter house. He runs into Joseph Morales in the finals, and well, now I'm kind of questioning everything about him. And Joseph Morales, for the record, very, very good, and it's not bad, but he was a minus 500 favorite over Joseph Morales. He was undefeated. He took out Roybert Echeverry in the first round. He beat Yakubov on the Ultimate Fighter as well by decision. His wins when he was fighting on the Kazakh regional scene, he's still beating some pretty good guys. Alisson Silva, 8-0 at the time. Edison Santos, 10-2 at the time. Arison Ferreira, Flavio Santos, four straight Brazilians. So he's not just fighting local guys and local tomato cans. He's fighting a decent level. Seems like this guy's going to be decent enough. So I had him in that finals against Joseph Morales, which, oh my God, did it ever look bad. More so than losing to Morales, who's good. I'm going to give you a pass on that one. It's that he looked to just be mentally checked out. He just at not posing any resistance, not offensively trying to get this fight to the ground. He shot no takedowns. He 0-for-1 on takedowns, right? He hardly threw any strikes. He's just sitting there constantly waiting. Morales took him down with ease, out-grappled him, and eventually submits him. You could see going into the second round, his corner's trying to wake him up, like, buddy, you're going to have to do something. And the first time he decides, I'm going to shoot, he shoots into the triangle choke. So I don't think his ring IQ is that good. I don't think his resolve is all that good. I don't know how good of a heart he has on him. It seems like he's mostly been the hammer throughout the most of his career, and hasn't necessarily been the nail all that much. So facing adversity is a little bit tough. Now, we talked earlier about how guys will win the Ultimate Fighter and then they're fighting a 20-fight UFC vet, or guys have had under 10 fights in their career and then all of a sudden they're taking a 20-fight UFC vet. Well, Ode Osborne's exactly that. He's got 22 pro fights. Of his 22 pro fights, he's competed in the UFC 12 times. And this is a spot he's been in lots. You know, he was the betting underdog in pretty well all of his fights. He went the distance with Steve Ursig as a huge underdog. His fight with Luis Garul, who we'll talk about a little bit later, he's a 2-1 betting underdog against him, is able to knock him out in the second round. He doesn't have, I wouldn't say he doesn't have cardio problems, he doesn't have a deep gas tank, but he's a seasoned vet that can fight the full 15 minutes. Doesn't always show up and look great. The Ronald Rodriguez fight was a little bit of a head scratcher, but he had plenty of moments against Rodriguez that he could have capitalized and won. Jafel Filo's good. Asu Almabayev's good. The aforementioned Steve Ursig had fought for a title. Tyson Nam back in the day, solid enough guy. It just feels like I got a guy here that is a little more proven, can wrestle, fights long when need be, has some decent pop in his hands. He's getting a little bit older by divisional standards. And I think he's capable of coming in and cashing one over just a more unproven kid. If they had said, listen, Idris, you're now 10-1. You're still a good prospect. Here's some guy from the Contender Series who's supposed to be a good prospect. That's the way to build him back up. To give him a 12-fight UFC vet who's fought most of the top guys in the division and largely gives an okay account of himself, tricky fighter, long, switch stance at times, hits with a nasty left hand, has a little bit of grappling he can fall back on, can possibly fight the distance, and there's no pressure on him because he's been the betting underdog in pretty well all of his fights. So he's a dangerous enough guy that even though it's not huge plus money that can be had on him, I just don't really want to bet Idris as a favorite. So this is like a default spam underdog play, kind of. They're never great, but there's 14 fights to put on the PRP. This one can end up all the way at the bottom, but I will ever so slightly feel like Ode Osborne can just edge this thing out, man. And I'm assuming the Texas guys might be behind him. I don't know. I really don't know what the politics are of the area or who cares. I don't even care, to be honest with you. Ode Osborne wins more often than not to cover the plus money price tag, so I'm going to take him.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, he's got like 5-inch reach advantage here. He's obviously fought way more competition. We know a lot more what to expect from him. And the one time that we saw Idris really take a step up in competition to make like to this level of competition, he looked horrible against Joseph Morales. I mean, he was obviously overpriced and everything like that. You know, a lot of those Kazakh fights over in Niza or whatever. I mean, there was like a little like there was something that came out recently about like some fixed fights going on over there. I'm not saying that any of his fights were particularly that, but he had the one big step up to, you know, Joseph Morales.
He's a veteran.
And a UFC caliber fighter who I would say Ode. Wrestling is questionable for Ode. He does lay on his back a little bit too much, but like while they're standing, while they're at range, like Ode is fast. He's experienced. He's only 2 years younger. It's not like there's some sort of massive age gap. Idris is only 2 years younger. Just so much more experience that if you put a slight, even slight plus money next to Ode's name, I'm going to have to click it as well this week. We got Aiden Correa taking on Luis Gruel, minus 280 for Correa. Comeback on Gruel, plus 240. Your thoughts?
I think Aiden Correa just absolutely rips him apart, but well, anything remains to be seen come Saturday night. But this guy's legit, man, and I've been saying for a long time that if you look at a lot of his losses, they're all competitive fights. He was 5-0 as an amateur. He's had a bunch of pro experience. It's that he's one of these guys that's fought good guys on the regional scene prior to coming to the UFC. And so when he comes in and he fights Alessandro Costa in his debut as a plus 300 underdog, there's a big surprise there. There's a big, oh man, this guy, overachieved. Like, it's, I don't think he overachieved at all. He's got nasty power, very, very quick. He's only 27 years old. He's already beat guys like Paris Moran, Chris Ocon, Albert Trujillo. He lost a Trujillo fight, but super close. Fought Michael Sear. That when you're not just one of these contender series guys, you've not fought anybody. You fought the best guys in the region. You lost one of them. You won more often than not. You've built yourself. You're ready to go. And so in his fight with Alessandro Costa, I thought it was, you know, a masterful performance. He put it on really well, lands his combinations. And that's the one thing about him is when he does eventually find the target, he's got some nasty power. That fight, he had been obviously taken down the first two rounds a little bit, but he outstruck him 42-12. All Costa really could do is try to get the takedowns. And Costa had a couple decent submission attempts as well, but this kid's got no quit in him. Keeps going, keeps persevering. They're both from Texas, so this is not really anybody's a fan favorite. But when I think you look at Aiden Correa, he looks like a guy that will be like a Josh Van type. I don't know that he'll end up being the champion, but he's young. He's at a KO gang. So he trains with Josh Van. He just got huge power, big power, big striking offense. And because it's flyweight, he can scramble himself out of bad spots. Gruel, meanwhile, and this is just like so sad. I'm 34. You know, Gruel's not old. He's 32 years old, but he's a flyweight, and he is old by flyweight standards. When you used to watch this guy back in the regional, he was the same way. He beat Albert Trujillo. He beat that Nick Pinsanini on the Contender Series. The difference is that he's already a finished product at that point. He's already 31 years old at that point. And so once he comes to the UFC, I don't know, man, his game's just been opened wide up. I am not going to accuse the guy of being on juice. But it's a little weird how you can fight 4 or 5 rounds on the Fury regional scene, and then you can't fight 2 rounds in the UFC without just flat gassing out. But that is the knock on him. He just doesn't have the gas to keep going. That fight with Ode Osborne, he won the first round. He did pretty good. Instantly in the second, he's gassed. Now, part of this is why we're backing Ody Osborne in his fight is that these savvy veteran guys, they got a lot of experience. They're able to get out of that first round. They manage their energy better. They take over. But his last fight against Jesus Aguilar, it's much of the same. Like, he's not overly looking to exert himself. He shot 5 takedowns and got none of them. 21 seconds of control time. So his wrestling, really all that ain't that good. His striking, he keeps it lower volume because he doesn't want to gas out. And I don't think his chin's all that good. Taking a guy in Aiden Correa, whose takedown defense is just as good as Jesus Aguilar. Yeah, no, I'd say maybe Jesus Aguilar is an okay grappler. But it's pretty well similar. So if you go 0-5 with him, you're going to have to stand. And he's not going to put up 85. He's going to put up 120. And you're not going to take them for 15 minutes. You're going to go down. And so I can't put it at the top because it's a flyweight fight, Paul. You know the rule. Mm-hmm. But I really like Aiden Correa comparatively to what his price is to some of these other big favorites. And I really like this kid. I think he's got the goods. And Garul is a perfect second fight to establish yourself as a real contender of the division. Realistically, Alessandro Costa is a tougher fight than Luis Garul. And you've taken him out already on short notice. Now you got a full camp in front of a hometown crowd to show up and show out. I think he's going to do it. So sign me up for the younger, better, more dangerous prospect.
Getting hit 85 times by Jesus Aguilar is inexcusable. It's inexcusable. Jesus Aguilar, before that, highest significant strike total, 35. Against Rafael Estevam, who is literally just spamming takedowns over and over and over. The guy doesn't throw. And then all of a sudden he goes out there. It was only 36% on the significant strikes, but it's just like Aguilar's, you know, not really like beating you with striking. It's not how anybody thought that fight was like. Nobody thought that fight was going to play out that way. I was on Ody Osborne because of like the length and reach advantage against Garul in that fight. Ode was a pretty sizable underdog, and him by KO was
a sharp play, man.
Was pretty nice. What's up?
That was a sharp play. It was a sharp play, honestly.
Yeah. But like Garul, I mean, you said that you don't think that you're gonna have Alden Correa top line, and maybe this is like the kiss of the death. Coming from Paul Shank here, it's just like, I don't know who I would trust more on this card than him, to be perfectly honest. Like, I think Luis Garul is like maybe the worst flyweight on the roster. Flyweight's really, 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 really talented. So this guy has not shown us any sort of ability. Even that win on Contender Series to get him into the UFC, he got taken down by Piccinini 10 times.
Wow.
And you may be like, oh, Piccinini's okay. Piccinini went against that Orozco guy over on Fury and like had to go life and death to the final bell with that guy. And that guy's like 5-4, like low level regional fighter. And like that getting taken down, controlled, and not so much controlled, but like that's not a good look. Piccinini's kind of proven on the regional scene now to really not be all that good. So just squeaking through that fight. Not all that impressive. Getting his head knocked off by Ode Osborne. Correa comes in short notice against a much harder opponent, as you said, in Costa, and comes through as a pretty sizable underdog. Like, I think, and Correa, on top of that, he's a Fury guy. So it's like, this is a hometown fight for him, isn't it?
They're both former Fury champions. So I don't think it matters. But with Alden, he's 27. He looks like a legit prospect. He's buddies with Josh Van. I think that you'll see this guy make a quick progression. The only thing I'm going to disagree is Garul is, I think he's really good for 5 minutes. This is flyweight. It's the one division where you have to have a gas tank. And when he was fighting for Fury, he did have one. But now he's 32 and he's being drug tested and he seems to just get extinguished after 4 or 5 minutes. And that's just a really bad spot to be against Alden Correa. So, we're in agreement there, man.
All right, we got a rematch. The rematch that absolutely nobody, except for maybe Jocelyn Edwards,
I'm sure
asked for. Edwards, -305 favorite, the comeback on the cornhole, +255. I mean, if you go back, you watch that fight between the two of them, like the only people who scored it, there was actually, I think it was unanimous decision. The only people who scored it for cornhole were the likely French biased judges cage side, because it was one of the worst decisions that you'll see. So not shocking that, you know, the previous winner of their fight is now plus 255. Because so you go back and watch that fight, it's just like, nah, she did not win that fight. It was one of the worst robberies of the year. Finishes over her last three opponents, albeit against some of the lower level competitors in the division, in Chelsea Chandler, Cab, God rest her soul, and Tamaris Vidal, who's like taking L's over on the regional scene now. So it's like none of that's all that impressive, but like Cornhole, her one win over like Cowan, one of the lower people on the totem pole. I think Edwards is kind of better everywhere. I think she can probably mix in wrestling. I think she's made a lot of improvements. She's longer, and shows some pop in her hands in her last couple of fights. You know, CF dot model, everything like that. But Cornhole won't be getting my money. What about yours?
Yeah, so I completely agree. If you look back the last time, it's like, oh, dude, she won the last time. Nora won, and now you can get her at this type of plus money. Like, why not? But it's like Paul mentioned, the last time it was in France, and the last time, although the significant striking numbers are in Nora's favor, she got taken down five times and literally got out grappled the entirety of it. But I think that sparked off something with Jocelyn Edwards. Jocelyn Edwards's first 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 fights all went to decision. This is a new Jocelyn Edwards, man. She takes out Tamaris Vidal, subs in the third round. She takes out Chelsea Chandler, knocks her in the first. She took out Priscilla Cachoeira, knocked her in the first. All of a sudden, she's cashing performance bonuses. She's finishing fights. And at 30 years old, it's young for women's MMA. I think she's got a long ways to go still. But you know that she has the wrestling background, or the advantage. You know she's got the grappling advantage. The real key here was she wasn't doing enough while she was on top. Okay, well, now this version of her is going to capitalize a lot more so. And for Nora, you're a French Muay Thai girl. You're fighting in France. They're obviously all cheering for you. She's 36 years old. She's not really a great MMA fighter. That was your spot, and she capitalized. She took advantage. You mentioned she beat Haley Cowan as well. Well, she missed weight for the Haley Cowan fight, but then eventually did, you know, find a rear naked choke of sorts. But it's a real ugly fight. Not much to it. Nora's not improved a whole lot. Jocelyn Edwards is bigger, faster, stronger. I think that's what it really comes down to. Now, you can say, well, they fought before. And, well, they fought before in the other girl's home country, and it was a robbery. Now they're fighting in Texas. It's a much better version of Edwards. It's an older version of Nora. Seems like it's lining up. But I ain't going to waste a whole lot of your time here. It just seems like Edwards has woke up the last few fights and is fighting a lot more aggressively. Only thing you can fault her for the last time she fought Nora is not enough aggression. Had the positions, not enough aggression. She shored that up, and she's going to prove that on Saturday night. So I got Edwards as well.
All right, moving on to the next fight. We got Puna Soriano taking on Ramiz Brahimi. Minus 120 for Ramiz. Comeback on Puna. Plus 100. Pretty much a straight pick. Who you got?
Yeah, well, you talk about Michelle Pereira and his inconsistency. My issue with Poriana Soriano is he seems to have lots of skill. Super inconsistent with these performances. Like the fight with Miguel Beza, it's a volume clinic. It's a cardio clinic. This guy does not break a sweat. And yet he absolutely tunes them to the tune of 144 significant strikes landed without tiring. The very next fight against Medic, no volume, no cardio, all power, baby. Knocks him out 31 seconds. The third one with Varetnikov, he wrestles the entire time and gasses. So what version of him are you going to get here? It's tough to say. At 185, he was a little undersized. He was a little gun-shy. His power, he had power at 185, but didn't really, wasn't huge by divisional standards. At 170, the guy hits hard. His wrestling, his Hawaiian wrestling background, state champion, not really great at 185. At 170, much better. His overall grappling, his overall cardio, everything seems better at 170 to the tune that Paul and I are joking around. This guy has completely revamped himself. He could be a fringe contender at 170 pounds. But the last fight with Vritnikov, where he death gassed and he really had to rely heavily on securing these takedowns and didn't really do much with them, it's not a great look. It's not a great look because Ramiz Brahimi has got better jiu-jitsu than Soriano, who also wrestled, knows how to wrestle. He's from Texas and is going to get a big pop from the crowd. And, you know, when they talk about a Jocelyn Edwards, it's like she wakes up one day and realizes, oh, it's an entertainment-based sport. Or, hey, I fought in good fighters and I didn't get hurt. Maybe I need to trust myself more. And they kind of break through. Ramiz Brahimi appears to have broken through. When he lost to Court McGee, got taken down 5 times, tired out. Ooh, bad look. Max Payne Griffin blows his ear up. Ugh. Ah, Griffin's good, so that was not terrible. Themba Garimbo takes him down 5 times, quadruples him on the significant strikes. This guy's awful. But the last three, not great competition. Billy Ray Goff, Mickey Gall, Austin Vanderfurt. It kind of proved that like his hands have gotten way better. His boxing combinations are decent. He's got okay power. If you take him down, his jiu-jitsu is good enough that he's not accepting position. He's scrambling to get back up, and he causes you to work. Soriano is not just going to lay and pray him the way he can lay and pray Veretnikov. Lay and pray in Veretnikov is the move, brother. That is what you do if you want to beat him. You can do that against him. I don't know that Ramiz just accepts the positions. And then you got the crowd who's going to be fiending for a Brahimi win. He's a fan favorite down there. They want action. They don't want one guy shooting takedowns and trying to hold on. They want the guy looking for the scrambles, looking for the sweeps, looking for the submission attempts. And then when they're standing, Soriano's got bigger power, but Brahimi never been knocked out. He had his ear blown up one time, but he could take a punch. And so he kind of presents a whole lot of problems to Poriano Soriano that kind of make me second guess this one, but it's an even fight. Both guys got merit. Both guys could win. Soriano is bigger than him. He's stronger than him. And he probably does have the offensive wrestling to secure takedowns. But based on his last performance, I don't know that he's got the cardio to just wrestle for 15 hard. He can knock out Medich quick. Even his fight with Beza. Miguel Beza was cooked right off the get-go. He wasn't presenting any type of pushback or resistance. Those fights he cruised in, if you kind of put the pressure on him a little bit, he falls apart. And Brahimi in Texas seems like it's interesting enough for me to maybe go out there and pull something off. So this is a weird one because people that are fans of the show or know me know like I've faded
Brahimi.
Yeah, quite a bit.
I've always been Team Puna.
And I think I'm going to
take it. Even through the rough patches, I've been Team Puna. And I think 170 Puna. Different beast, man.
Yeah.
But the problem with this fight is that you can't really lean on that wrestling because like the offensive grappling ability of Brahimi, I think, is a big problem. Who has more power on the feet? I think it's Puna. Who is a little bit more durable? Probably Brahimi. I mean, I think the books have it right as a pick'em here. I'm going to pick Puna, but that's just because, you know, I got to support, you know, the Hawaiian wave. But, I think the books have it right. Do I think I have a massive edge? I like a pick 'em price on this fight? No, I think it's a properly priced pick 'em.
That's fair.
And you're on Brahimi.
Yeah. I would take another chewy bet with you, but
you can do that.
Okay, well then let's do it.
And then that would get you up to 3, and then that would get me to -1. So I would end up, if you win both of them, we're gonna have to write this shit down. maybe you can write it down so I don't log myself out.
Yeah. Yeah.
What were the ones that we took? We took Leal versus Njiquani, and now Puna versus Brahimi, and you're already owing me one.
And I do owe you one already.
Yeah. All right. Things are getting hot and heavy here. All right. We got Phil Rowe taking on JP Lebezniani, -205 for JP. The comeback on Phil Rowe, +175. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, probably a better live betting spot. Lebezniani comes from a grappling background, and the guy can definitely grapple. It seems like he's maybe got some durability issues of sorts, and his striking was no good. As an amateur, he subbed everybody. As a pro, he started off subbing a bunch of guys, but Spike Carlisle knocks him out in the first round. Jacoby Jones, basically, I wouldn't say made him quit. The referee waved it off, but kid gassed and took an absolute beating. Now, Jacoby Jones tried to fight, make it in the UFC, was on the Contender Series, but couldn't get past a Contender Series fight. Spike Carlisle did fight in the UFC, but flamed out. Fights in Ryzen now, barely went over there. I would say that this kid is kind of maybe getting ready to get exposed. And his last four have looking okay. Triangle's my boy Keegan Genrich, but Genrich is a wrestler. Genrich gets himself into a bad position. He gets triangled. His last fight with Jack Cohdon, beautiful head kick, but again, it's a minute into the fight on the Contender Series. If you can extend him out to a second and the third round, I think he's prone to getting knocked out. If you can touch him up with strike standing, I think he's prone to getting knocked out. If you've got enough grappling that you can throw it off some of his early submission attempts, you can beat this guy. And Phil Rowe's got a lot of issues. And you know me, I love fading Phil Rowe. But the path to fading Phil Rowe is an offensive wrestler. The guy cannot stuff a takedown to save his life. If you want to fight for 15 minutes, Phil Rowe's got good cardio. If you want to box, Phil Rowe's got okay boxing. Huge reach on him. Legitimate power. He's got these third round finishes. Knocked out Angelusa in the third round. Knocked out Nico Price in the third round. Lost the first round to Jason Witt. Lost the first round to Orion Koski. Knocked the both of them out in the second round. Levinyoski may have some early success. If you can get a good live betting number on Phil Rowe, Phil kind of comes together a little bit later. And everyone's got to get out of jail free card against Phil Rowe, which is the offensive wrestling. I don't know that Levinyoski necessarily has that. If you do take Phil Rowe down, he's a fairly high-level BJJ black belt. You don't have these short wrestling stature. Ko took him down four times. Luce had taken down three times. Guys like Jason Witt, four times. The path is there. 6'3" with an 80-inch reach, you had better take him down. And I don't really feel like John Paul's going to do that. He's giving up 7 or 8 inches in the reach department. He's giving up 4 inches in the height department. And I don't think he's got the cardio. And then the last thing, I know I sound like just a broken record on this, but you've got a kid here in John Paul Levinyoski, who people like. We enjoy him, right? He's got 11 pro fights. He's 27 years old. Is this guy the LFA champion? No. Is he a champion really anywhere? No. He's in the UFC. His very first fight in the UFC is Phil Rowe. Phil Rowe's got a lot of experience. This is his 9th UFC fight. He's a BJJ black belt. He's knocked out some decent guys. He's fought some decent guys. His resume includes fights with Seung-hyo Ko, who I like, Jake Matthews, Neil Magny. He's grappled good guys. He's been in there with, I guess a kind of a weaker level as well once you go way, way back. I just mean it's plus money, but you're going to probably get better plus money after the first round. And Phil's a slow starter. Levinyoski's a fast starter. If you can catch him in the second or the third, there'd be some value there in Phil Rowe. So, how do you feel great about a Phil Rowe bet, especially when you fade him all the time? But yeah, I'm actually going to take him for some short dog money here.
I'm with you. And the thing about it is that, like, I faded Lebesgne against Ginrich in LFA. I like Ginrich, and man. I came off looking like an idiot in that fight. But it's like, he wasn't. And maybe it's like JP, maybe he's just made crazy improvements over the last 3 years. And he's young, so it's like definitely in play. But like that Jacoby Jones fight, like he got banged up pretty hard in there. It's just like, and then you go back to like Spike Carlisle in 2019. I'm like, that's quite a long time ago. But it's like the guy doesn't have that many pro fights. As you said, he's not some sort of like elite grappler by any stretch of the imagination. He did get a sub against Ginrich, and like Ginrich looked like a horrible bet. Basically the moment that fight started. So like maybe I'm missing something with this guy. He obviously cost me money already, but I don't know if I can get to him in his UFC debut in front of a big crowd. Gotta be his first time in front of like a sold out, you know, a pro sports level arena with 20,000 people screaming your name. There's a lot of pressure to that. Being Phil Rowe, being around the block a few times, having an 8-inch reach, you know, you're gonna have to put up a fight for probably, like, it's hard to get Phil Rowe out of there. So
facts.
Yeah, maybe Phil Rowe's a better live bet because JP should probably have some success early, but I think Phil Rowe plus 175 is a fine wager. We got Yadier Duval taking on the twerker, Jordan Levitt, plus 330 for Levitt. Duval is the biggest favorite on this card, or I guess the biggest favorite that we've talked about at this point in the card. You know, going from underdog in fixed fight against Isaac Dalgarian to, you know, what a move. Historic move up on the screen right there. Most of that movement was in the last minute. In the last, like, couple hours before the fight, because it was as rigged as it was rigged. We haven't heard anything from Dalgarian since then. I'm sure he's on like some sort of hush order. Long story short of it is that Yadier Duval is actually a pretty decent prospect. He may look a little bit sloppy. He jumps for guillotines a little bit too much, everything like that. But like, guy's 10-0, and he's an absolute like tank. He is going to come and try to murder you. Levitt's more of like a crafty pull guard. You know, I don't think he's a great wrestler, but it's like he finds ways to weasel his way to victory. I think he's outmatched physically here. Am I excited to play Del Valle at minus 400? No, but he's the pick. I suppose if you're going to play parlays and stuff, maybe he's one of the guys you have to trust. I've just never been a Levitt guy, and he has, you know, pulled out some wins against, like, over the course of his UFC career by being crafty. But, like, in terms of, like, who's, like, a quality athlete who has, like, upside as a prospect, it's all Del Valle for me. What about you?
Yeah, yeah, I completely agree. It's weird that Del Valle goes from a sizable underdog to now the betting baby of the week. But to me, he really much is. He's a legitimate prospect, like Paul said. The kid's undefeated. He's 29-year-old Cuban. 29, that's essentially 14 years old as a Cuban because they age so impeccably well. They're freak athletes that normally you see them when they're in their mid-30s or their early 40s and they're operating at a high level. Del Valle, he's legit, man. He's a really good athlete. He's in incredible physical shape. And then he's another one of these Texas guys. Yes, he is Cuban, but he didn't end up in Miami. He ended up down in Texas. He gets quality work in there. He's a fan favorite of sorts. Fury knew that they had a legitimate prospect. As Paul mentioned, he's dropping on guillotine chokes because he's young and he's undefeated. And he knows even if he ends up on his back, he's just going to get back up and resume beating you, which is what he does best. When you talk about guys that come from the regional scene that earned it the hard way, he'd be one of them. He beat Eric Mercado, solid. He beat Michael Aswell, UFC veteran currently. Peña Alamov, very serviceable Texas regional show guy. Those are the guys you want to beat to get to the next level. On against Montero on the Contender Series, he lands 150 significant strikes. And then in his last two, he shows you that he's got an excellent grappling game as well. That's the best part of his game. He can strike. He's got big power. But he's got a knack to get to the back. And once he gets that rear naked choke, it's game over. Levitt is a BJJ black belt. Levitt's an excellent grappler. But Levitt's got a tendency to get out-muscled and rear naked choked. Now, it happened against him against Paddy Pimblett. He did okay in the first round. Second round, Pimblett just tosses him to the ground, takes the back, gets to squeezing. Levitt taps out. Same thing happened in the Chase Hooper fight. Mm-hmm. Chase Hooper is able to get to the back, grab the rear naked choke, and submit him as well. When you look at Levitt, it's like his game. You looked at this guy and you said he is an absolute first-round finishing machine. People would laugh in your face, but he is. Beat Kurt Holobow with first-round Anaconda. Victor Martinez, first-round knockout. Matt Sales had subbed him with an inverted in the second. Matt Wyman knocked him out, 22 seconds of the slam. Luke Flores on the Contender Series, first-round arm triangle choke. It's weird, but that he's a one-round guy. He doesn't have the physicality to beat you over the course of 15, unless it's the Trey Ogden fight, which he used little bit higher volume. In that fight, he landed less than 70 significant strikes. Ogden just didn't throw anything. Do you think Del Valle, guy that landed 150 on the Contender Series, guy that's 29 years old, 11-0, fighting in Texas, you think this guy's going to throw less than 100 significant strikes your way? Like, nah, it ain't going to happen. He can take you down and beat you. He can stand up and beat you. I just think he gets it done wherever he wants. If you got a book specific to what the submission is, I think Del Valle by rear naked choke is absolutely live. If that doesn't hit, he's winning two of the three rounds or finishing them one way or the other. So I get the line's big, but Dalgarian was supposed to be a mega prospect. Dalgarian's got excellent wrestling credentials. He was training at a good gym. He's training at altitude. He's a physical specimen, right? He decided to throw the fight. Del Valle is a top prospect, but was fighting a top prospect. That's why he was a big underdog. Del Valle is now fighting Jordan Levitt. And I agree with him at being now the big favorite himself, and I agree with him getting the victory. So Del Valle for me. Worst case scenario, they buried it on the undercard so I can rebuild. But it ain't going to come to that, Paul. I ain't rebuilding nothing this week. We're letting it ride and having a good time. Del Valle is going to start that off for us.
And that rebuild could be after the rebuild in the first fight of the night, which will be Carly Judas versus Juliana Miller, who, I mean, if these two stand, if Juliana Miller, who's not a good wrestler by any stretch of the imagination, is not able to get jump on a back, force a scramble, she's just going to get boxed up and probably eat 300 significant strikes over the course of 15 minutes if she lasts that long. She's not a great wrestler. She does probably have a submission grappling advantage here, but how does she get the fight into that situation? It's women's MMA, so crazy things are always in play to happen. Judith doesn't have some sort of shining record, but what we have seen from her in her last two fights particularly, it looks like somebody who's kind of figuring it all out. She's from New Orleans, which is not all that far from Houston. Like, it's actually pretty close as the crow flies. So I'm sure she'll have family, friends, and supporters in the mix in Houston, Texas there. It's minus 750, which is never fun or exciting, but I think she boxes her up. I don't have very much interest in Juliana Miller. Do you?
No, I don't. I look at every angle all the time. So I try to pursue the angle of maybe Juliana Miller, who is a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt, who does have good Jiu-Jitsu. Maybe she can use that grappling. Maybe she can get on top. It's more than just what Paul's saying about the lack of wrestling. It's the lack of being able to commit to just that being the game plan. She'd have to get a quick little trip takedown and then ride out minutes, 3, 4, 5 minutes of control time. Because she doesn't have a big ground and pound. She doesn't have a big submission game. So really, what the striking exchanges are, you getting punched in the face 30, 40 times. Even if you do get a takedown in 2, 3 minutes of control time, they're probably not going to give it to you. And therein lies the biggest issue with her. When you look at Carly Judice, she played college softball. So she's a college athlete, a different type of sport than your traditional martial arts sport or your combat sports, I should say. But all the same, it's that she is a pretty good athlete. And when Paul says that it looks like here's a girl that's figuring it out as she goes, she has 7 pro fights. She has 7 pro fights to her record, and 3 of them occurred in the UFC. She is very much learning on the job. She fought in the Contender Series at 3-0, and she lost. And they still signed her. Very next fight's in the UFC, and she loses. What does she do? You're 26 years old. You're a natural athlete, and you have less than 5 pro fights. Yeah, you just keep getting better and better, and that's exactly what she's done. Now, Eunice smoking the Dubin, well, you know, that was a beatdown waiting to happen. But Nicole Cagliari, the last time out, it's like this Judy's don't go nowhere. It's big, long, extended combinations. She's fast. She's got good footwork. And I know I just keep name dropping, but to liken it to a Josh Van. Josh Van's only been training in martial arts for 3 years, but he's a very good athlete. He's got excellent footwork. He's figured it out very quickly. She has figured it out very quickly. Infinite cardio, deep striking prowess, and she's only getting better and better and better. So when you look at Juliana Miller, the biggest issue is that I look at the Luana Santos fight, where she quite literally charged face first into all of the punches. She does not angle off. She does not move laterally. Everything is linear on a straight line to get onto the inside. If you punch her in the face and sidestep her, she just goes right through. And that's what Luana Santos is able to do routinely. That's what Carly Judice will do. Okay, well, that fight's 2 years ago. Yes, so Miller takes 2 years off after that. They actually offered her a fight with Carly Judice in February of 2025. Juliana Miller pulled out. They book her against Ivana Petrovic, which is her last fight. It's her first fight in 2 years, and be honest with you, I thought she looked awful. Petrovic has got a little bit of judo, I'll give her that. But like, Petrovic is tossing Juliana Miller around. You know, she gets a takedown early in the first round and holds a bunch of control time, and then unfortunately starts to tire, and Miller is able to just kind of dog her. You know, the 8 minutes of control time, the 3 for 9 on takedowns, all that's good. That will be Miller's path of victory. She needs to shoot a dozen takedowns, get 3 of them, and rack up 10 minutes of control time. I'm telling you why that's not going to work. With 8 minutes of control time against Petrovic, she landed 22 significant strikes. So that is the problem. If you get hit with 30 or 40 significant strikes standing, take this girl down and have 3 minutes of control time and land 10 strikes that round, you're going to lose. Helps that it's the first fight in case we got to rebuild, but you never have a rebuild mentality until you're forced to do it. You go in pre-flop thinking this is going to go smooth, and the first two fights are the top, the two biggest favorites. Let's go ahead and get them out of the way. And we've got a full 12-fight card of 50-50s and potential pie shooters coming after that. The first two should go smooth, and I do think Judy's kicks this thing off. Is the line too wide for a women's MMA fight that includes one girl who's got better grappling and one girl who's got less than 10 fights? Brother, 100%. Probably. This is way too wide. But it doesn't change the fact that Judy's is probably going to win this fight more often than not, and she's the play for me.
Probably win 70-80% of the time. So it's like, even at like plus 500, I don't think there's that much, if any, value on Juliana Miller. I just really struggled to see her keep up in the striking. And I haven't seen the wrestling from her to lead me to believe that she's going to be able to force that game. Like, Gabriela Fernandez was able to get 2 takedowns, hold some positions and stuff. But, like, that's a pretty quality opponent. And for, like, and, like, this Judice is getting better every single fight, it seems.
Yeah.
Fight to fight. So, what she, you know, those holes in her game back then may not be here now. Anyway, we are just about out of time. But before we go, and with the PRP code.
All right, baby. This week, we're going to go with Anthony Hernandez. Jeff Neal. Love Jeff Neal. Dan Ige is going to be dog number one. Sergey Spivak is going to be dog number two. We're going to go Jacoby Smith. We're going to go with Michelle Pereira. Carlos Leal. I got a shoey bet with Paul on that one. Ode Osborne, officially dog number three. Alden Correa. We both really like him. Jocelyn Edwards. I'm going to take Ramiz Brahimov. Paul's on the other side of that one. We have a secondary shoey bet on it. Phil Rowe. Phil Rowe's still underdog right now. Yeah, I mean, good money underdog, too. So four underdogs there, and then we're closing out some favorites. Yadier Duvall and Carly Judice. So 14 fights on the card, four underdogs, like the underdogs that we do got. And, of course, there's a Fury FC on the Friday because they're from Texas. Organizations love doing that now. UFC's in town Saturday. Let's do the Friday. And it's the best Fury card I've ever seen in my life, stacked-wise. Big names, good fighters. There's also BFL on Thursday, and there's Unified MMA on Friday, and there's 50, 60, 70 good bettable fights this weekend that, you know, maybe some of the ones that you're not certain of, or your Sergey Spivak could get knocked out real early, or, you know, Chidi Ajokwani versus Carly Al could be a stinky affair with some weird side business going on. Like, you don't have to force it, but a 14 fight PRP this weekend. Yeah, that's what I'm here for too, Paul. So let's go ahead and do that. Cash some big money.
Yeah. Like, why force something in on, you know, a heavyweight banger like Delia versus...
Let's flip a coin.
Versus Spivak when you have, like, Joel Faglier taking on Cody East.
Dude, yeah, you got my money. Yeah, Joel Faglier is my boy. This is my boy. And it's minus 300, right? That's a good parlay piece for me. So I'm taking Faglier.
He's very talented, but, like, he was a former 170. So eventually that'll catch up with him. I don't think that's going to catch up with him at this level. I think that catches up to him when he gets to the UFC level. But, like, that's the funny thing about him is that, like, he used to be, like, kind of skinny, and then he put on, like, a COVID 50, it seems like. But, like, he still has, like, small guy speed and ability.
Why am I drawing a blank on this, man? I'm getting old, Paul. Who's the big fat middleweight that came back? Jake Collier. Hey, it worked for him early, too. He's really fast. Yeah. He's an heavyweight. Guy's a middleweight. Fighting heavy, super fast.
And then you hit your tipping point where it's like, oh, well, this guy just happened to always be 250 pounds and built like a shit brick house. Like, that's where you run into some problems. But at this regional level, against, you know, guys maybe a little bit way past their prime, it works. Anyway, if you're interested in more, there's a Discord, there's a Patreon. We're kind of in and out of there all the time. Cody drops his regional Canadian MMA picks. Link is in the description of this video or podcast if you are interested in getting into the regional scene. Otherwise, we're here every single week. I think there's 7 straight weeks of UFC betting picks from myself and Cody Saftick. So that is it for us this week. Hope you enjoyed the show. For Cody, I'm Paul. Saying goodbye and good luck.